Well, hello and welcome to the Illusions Podcast. My name is Greg Lauer, and here's episode 4, in which we're going to be discussing the book Illusions by Richard Bach. What I've been doing up till now is reading a little section of the book, kind of discussing the thoughts that it brings to mind for me and some other people that I've discussed the book with. And I think we'll go ahead and keep up with that more or less tradition that we've started here. Okay, so I'm picking up still in the introduction. It looks like handwritten notes. It's actually copied from Richard Bach's handwritten notes on grease-stained lined paper. When he first wrote the story down, all he had at hand was grease-stained lined paper that he had used or kept handy while working on his biplane. So we're picking up with what's numbered as paragraph number 8. And in here, it's written, if a storm passed as he spoke. Now he's talking then about the master, or the reluctant messiah. If you have any questions about that, go back and listen to the first 3 podcast episodes. You can find those at illusions.podomatic.com. Picking up here, if a storm passed as he spoke, not a raindrop touched a listener's head. The last of the multitude heard the words as clearly as the first. No matter lightning nor thunder in the sky about, and always, always he spoke to them in parables. Now I made myself a note and have discussed this with a few friends various times about the inclusion of speaking to the multitudes in parables. And I draw a kind of a parallel with this book that I've heard a couple of different teachers of the Bible discuss, and one of those is a fellow named Chuck Missler. Chuck runs an organization called Koinonia House, and Chuck always says that whenever you run across some sort of little detail in the Bible, that it's not there by accident. That's there as part of the grand design for what the Bible is talking about. And I think the same is true in the book Illusions. I don't think Richard Bach included anything in here by accident. I think every word is very, very carefully chosen and included. So the point that I wanted to make with that, and always he spoke to them in parables. Once you recognize your own place in the world as a reluctant messiah, and again, messiah does not necessarily mean savior of the world. The word messiah is actually Hebrew for anointed, anointed of God, and I think we're all anointed of God, and I think that's also the point that Richard Bach is making, that we're all anointed of God in some way. But the point here, and always he spoke to them in parables, there's an awful lot of time when, just as a practical matter, people are very resistant to being told things directly. For example, in a lecture format, very resistant to take on new information or whatever. And if you've ever noticed, a really good teacher or a really good speaker will rely on stories a lot to get their point across. One of my favorites is Zig Ziglar. If you never listened to Zig, I would almost dare you, not encourage you, but I would dare you to listen to Zig and just not be... when you do, you're going to find yourself drawn in. For every point Zig makes, he tells a story. His stories would be kind of a modern-day equivalent of parables. Jesus told a lot of parables, if you're a student of the Bible. Jesus told a lot of parables. Almost everything he told to the multitudes, he told in parable form, rather than just directly teaching. And when one of the disciples questioned him on that, he explained that the vast majority of these people are just not ready to be slammed in the face with solid truth. Now, of course, Jesus didn't say it like that. That's my own paraphrase. But it's kind of the same idea that's being conveyed here in Illusions. So as you begin to recognize your own mastery, and you begin to recognize your own assignment as an anointed of God in some way in your life, just remember, when you're speaking to the multitudes, and the multitudes might be your spouse. The multitudes might just be your friends or the folks in your neighborhood. When you're speaking to them, you're not very likely to be very well accepted if you're just really blunt about some of the things in your own Messiah journey. The next paragraph, picking up there, it says, it's number 9, it says, "And he said unto them, within each of us lies the power of our consent to health and to sickness, to riches and to poverty, to freedom and to slavery. It is we who control these and not another." And I remember being absolutely and utterly just gobsmacked when I saw that the first time, and the second time, and the 30th time, and the 40th time. Because I have bought in, up until I really got this and got a handle on this, I had bought in completely to the American society's victim mentality. And if you've been around this country any length of time in the U.S., you know exactly what I mean by the victim mentality. You see it all over the place. You know, it's never my fault. It's always somebody else's. You know, it's a bad economy, or this guy didn't do his job, or that guy didn't do this thing, or this guy didn't come through on a promise, or whatever the case is going to be. We have been taught, ever since I can remember, in America, and I'm in my early 40s, so I know it's been a long time. We have been taught that it's almost never our responsibility, or it's almost never our fault. When something doesn't go our way, you know, when we get sick, it's because of some guy brought germs. If we don't have enough money, you know, now take a look at these Occupy movements. These people are protesting the difference between the so-called 1% and the so-called 99%. And the point that none of them seems willing to acknowledge is, you know, there's an awful lot of us that are technically in the 1%, however you grade that. And one reason we're in the 1% is we just got off of our butt and we did something productive and we get paid for that. Okay, I mean, the Occupy folks are talking about, you know, greedy corporate guys this and greedy corporate guys that. And, you know, they're protesting in many cases, don't even know what they're protesting, but protesting the, you know, corporate greed and, you know, corporations, yes. Are there greedy people in corporations? Yes. And to a degree, that greed is good. You know, to quote Gordon Gekko from the 80s, to a degree, that greed is good. If it wasn't for the profit motive involved, Thomas Edison would never have pursued the idea of an electric light bulb. And just think of where we've come as a society based on electric lamps. If it wasn't for the profit motive involved, nobody would have developed MP3 technology, which is what's letting us communicate over who knows how many miles right now. If it wasn't for the profit motive involved, Apple would not have made a really good user interface that was then borrowed by other companies. And the PC would never have really taken off, especially for artists and folks like that. I mean, just imagine how much better we have it, especially in American society. Because somebody in a corporation somewhere got greedy enough to want to make a profit and want to make as much money as they could, and they realized that the right way to do that is to trade their value for somebody else's value. And the right way to do that is to establish a situation where both parties come out ahead. So, you know, I kind of get the Occupy thing. I understand the frustration. I share some of the frustration that they have towards our government, which is just completely out of control. But, by the same token, we have all bought into the lie that this is just the way things are. And because we bought into the lie that this is just the way things are, they're not going to ever be different. Because we are giving our consent to those things staying just the way they are. You know, I've heard some people say we live in a broken and fallen world ever since, you know, Adam took a bite of the apple, that we live in a broken and fallen world, and, you know, everything goes towards entropy or, you know, complete disillusion and falling apart unless we take positive steps to change that. And I think the same exact thing happens when the master in the story is talking about within each of us lies the power of our consent to health and to sickness, to riches and to poverty, freedom and slavery. You know, nowadays people talk about the law of attraction and they say, well, if you want to be healthy, you just imagine yourself healthy. And You know, if you want to imagine, if you want to be rich and prosperous, you imagine yourself rich and prosperous. And to a degree, that's true. You got to have that mindset. Now, I don't think that Richard Bach is wanting us to just leave it with, you know, just our thinking makes it so. I think he's of the opinion, and I think the rest of the book is going to bear me out on this as we go through it. But I think he's of the opinion that our thinking just sets the stage. And then we create from there. So if we give ourselves permission to be healthy, and we give ourselves the permission to be prosperous, and we give ourselves permission to be free, then we can kind of move on from that point. And feel free if you disagree. I look forward to hearing comments and of course, email. You can email me here at the blog. That's 44squared@gmail.com. And we can have a nice, healthy debate about that. And in the meantime, while waiting for your comments, I think I've kind of beat that paragraph to death. So I'm getting ready to move on here. Going to paragraph numbered 10. It says, a middleman spoke and said, well, easy words for you, master. For you are guided as we are not, and need not toil as we toil. A man has to work for his living in this world. Number 11, then, says, the master answered and said, once there lived a village of creatures along the bottom of a great crystal river. Now, that begins a parable that the master is going to speak. And I don't actually want to take the time right now to cover that entire parable, because it actually goes quite a while, quite a number of paragraphs. And it's a brilliant, in my opinion, just an absolutely brilliant answer to the idea that we've got to toil for our living in this world. And one of the points that struck me the first few times I read the book, and you may recall from earlier podcasts, I read the book at least once a year now and always get something new. Always get something new out of there. And one of the things that struck me is the problem with the statement from the gentleman in the crowd is I don't think he remembers that he's one of God's anointed also. Because he is, by his statement, we have to work for our living in this world. He has given himself consent to a certain condition. And in his mind, it's a certain slave-based condition. I would even venture to say a certain slave-based condition. He's given himself consent to a reality where he has to work or else he's not going to be supported. He's given himself consent to argue with the master who's come to teach him that he has the power to choose for himself whether he has to work in this world to support himself or not. And I think that's kind of a dangerous ground, actually, if we start to put ourselves in that mindset that we have to do something, or we have to do this, or we have to do that. I think that's kind of a dangerous ground because it's all too easy at that point to forget that we don't necessarily have to do these things. I mean, there are always choices. And I heard somebody once argue with a corporate speaker who'd come in to talk to our company, and the guy said, you don't have to do anything. You know, the only two things that are mandatory in this world are death and taxes, and even taxes is an option if you don't mind going to prison. So, you know, just got to remember, there's very few things that we actually have to do in this world. Everything else is by the power of our choice and by the power of our consent. Or in other words, to use Richard Bach's terms from later in the book, everything else that we live is simply by the power of the script that we write for ourselves. And now the next time we meet up, I'm going to start again right where we left off here, and I'm going to pick up and I'm actually going to read the entire parable, go through the entire parable that next time, and then kind of loop back around to pick up the lessons that I see in there, piece by piece by piece. I got a feeling that the next episode is going to be a little bit longer than the 15 minutes I try for on a regular basis here. And I'm always kind of surprised when I look up at my recording software and realized that I am right on the 15-minute mark already. So hopefully you've gotten something from this podcast. I enjoy keeping these short. If I continue to get some feedback on making the episodes longer, then I'll take a look at that. And otherwise, I will hope to see you on the next episode. You take care now. And if I don't see you before then, Merry Christmas. Bye-bye.